everybody. This is John Tatey welcoming you back to Pop Mom, the podcast where culture is relative. Yes, it's time again for my mom, Bonnie Tatey, to share her view of pop culture, small town life, and the riddles of human nature. It's all here. On this episode, we discuss the Oscar-nominated film The Holdovers. Let's bring Mom in now. Hi, Mom.
Hi, Johnny. How are you?
I'm good. Boy, we got a lot of listener mail since the last podcast, so we'll get to that in a little bit. First, I want to talk to you about toilet paper. I don't know why, but I understand you want to talk to me about toilet paper today.
I do want to talk to you about toilet paper. When I was a kid, it was very fun to go into different people's bathroom to see what color toilet tissue they were using. And there was mint green, blue, pink, yellow, and sometimes the rare peach color.
Ooh, peach. What a pleasure. An aesthetic pleasure as you clean yourself up.
Right. Now, that's long gone, and I get it. The dyes, very bad, whatever. But it sure was pretty. So now we go to, I'm going to just say Charmin, because I think where I grew up, it was a big Scott paper. Scott toilet paper was the brand that everyone had in their house.
Scott. Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, things change.
Yeah.
So unbeknownst to me, Charmin came out with a, and I bought this. This is how I found out. They had toilet paper, soft toilet paper. We all know the bear.
The bears,
blah,
yeah.
Blah, blah. Okay. So now they have toilet paper that has ridges in it, which really gets you thinking about stuff you don't want to be thinking about. I just want to go to the bathroom. I don't want to contemplate what the toilet paper is doing. I'm just not that interested. Just do what it's supposed to do and we'll go on our way.
The texture of the toilet paper is making you think about it more deeply?
Yes.
Okay.
It's like, oh, look at these ridges. I guess it picks up more. Oh, God. Who wants to think about that? I don't.
Okay.
So then they came out and I bought this by accident. Like the softest, mushiest stuff. That is absolutely useless. Dad loves it. It is, it's like a cloud. It's like using toilet paper with the consistency of a cloud.
Wow,
it's
it sounds magical.
Oh, it's awful. Because you can imagine how effective a cloud would be.
Oh, it would be like a dream, a unicorn cloud.
Well, no, because you can put your hand right through it.
Oh, I thought the cloud would do all the work for me.
No,
it's a
magical
cloud. Oh, to sit on that magical cloud. Wow. Okay. It sounds great.
All right. So now the innovation, I mean, to me, it's like they must be attending the Dundee Awards of toilet paper every year, and they have to have something new because now the perforations are wavy for easier separation.
Oh, I never even thought of the pattern of the perforation. Wow. Wavy, huh? I mean, does it separate easier? Did you try it?
Yeah, I bought it, unknowing, but then I read about it. And I just think, I don't really care that much about, I just want it to do its job and then say goodbye. I don't even want to say goodbye. I just want to flush the toilet.
Yeah.
So now we have the perforations, and I can't wait because pretty soon they're going to have Christmas tree perforations and Halloween perforations. Just end it. Just stop it.
I think many people would say that the color would be the grossest feature, that they don't like. I think the color would gross people out more than the ridges, because I think that's why they got rid of the color, right?
No.
Kind of gross once it's mixed with all your effluvia.
Well, it's not like you put it under a microscope and study it.
Yeah, well, you seem to be.
I'm not. I'm just saying, I think it's stupid that they're wasting, that they're paying somebody to come up with all these stupid ideas.
Well, that's marketing. So you're saying that the innovation should have stopped at making the toilet paper soft. That's all we needed.
That's all we needed.
Yeah, I'd say that that's fair. Although the ridges, I don't have a problem with the ridges. A rather disgusting way to kick off this episode of the podcast. I have to, and we're going to talk about sweets and snacks for the rest of the opener.
Well, here. We're getting this out of the way.
Yeah,
we're
okay.
Getting this
out so of just way. Forget. Oh yeah, go ahead. Finish up.
All right. I just think enough. That's what I think. Enough already.
Well, you're buying it. They're getting the data from your supermarket. It's coming in live. And they're like, oh, Bonnie Tatey, she's a tough customer. And even she loves our new wavy perforations. We got a bona fide hit on our hands here. They're popping corks at the Charmin factory. Yes.
Stop. Just stop.
The kids and my lovely wife are out of town for Easter. So I get a little peace and quiet, but I won't get to steal their candy this year. Mom, what is your favorite Easter candy to steal? And are there any innovations this year in Easter candy?
There are less innovations this year.
I see. They're putting all their work into the toilet paper and they're just letting it ride with the Easter candy.
It is shocking. The drugstore has two shelves of all different kinds of jelly beans. Jelly beans, jelly beans. So let me ask you this. I'm not sure when this statistic is from, but how many jelly beans do you think they make every year for Easter?
You're not sure where the statistic is from, so it may not even be correct.
Well,
is that right?
It's actually, it's from the Tilton Diner, but I don't know where they got it from.
Okay. How many jelly beans in America are made for Easter every year?
Yeah.
I'll say a billion.
14 billion.
14 billion. Whoa.
Jelly beans are not my favorite. I don't like
them. Yeah, who's eating all those jelly beans?
I don't know.
Two shelves of them at the drugstore, huh?
At the drugstore. And the rest is all taken up with, I'll let you guess.
The other Easter candies in the display?
Peeps and any kind of thing that Reese's makes. And Reese's and
Well, you didn't really let
Brock,
me guess, did you? But okay.
I know, because it's upsetting to me. Easter used to be, you could get these, oh, really gross. Do you know what these are? They're called duck eggs.
No.
They're like marshmallow with a quarter inch thick, somewhat hard coating on it.
Okay.
All different colors.
Yeah.
Like big Brazil nuts, shaped like big Brazil
duck
nuts.
Eggs. I'm picturing like malted milk balls in egg shape.
Nope,
no,
nope.
Marshmallow on the inside, huh?
Marshmallowy. Anyway, they don't make those anymore. They don't make the Brock's. Doesn't. I don't even know if Brock's is still in business. I think they're not. But I used to like the malted eggs with the layer of chocolate and then the crunchy outside.
Oh yeah,
shell.
They still make those.
Oh, no,
you
they
can
don't.
Hardly avoid them.
You can't find them.
Ma, I have
They're
them every
done.
Year.
Not this year.
Okay, I'm going to look it up right now. Brock's.
All right.
Chocolate eggs. Although they're not really chocolate, are they? But...
Malted. They're malted milk eggs.
Yeah, all right. That's like a million results. Walgreens in stock. You can get them on Amazon, Target.
The man at the candy store in Maine said they didn't make them anymore, that they're old stock.
Oh, so you think all these retailers are cleaning out?
Nope. I don't know, but I'm going to... Where did you say? Walgreens?
Walgreens has them, yeah.
All right.
This episode brought to you by Walgreens. Yeah, so Walgreens, I think, has your malted milk eggs.
All right.
And they're 25% off, according to this page.
Wow, okay. All right.
All right. So the listeners got to hear us shop a little. Mom, do you have an Easter quiz
for me?
I do. I have three more questions because I did ask you the jelly bean.
Oh, that was one of the questions.
That was one of the questions.
I thought it smelled like one of the questions because of its dubious sourcing. That tends to be the case with your quizzes. So I'm just hoping these questions have answers.
They all have answers. But what I'm saying to you is, I don't know where the Tilton Diner got them.
Yeah, I understand.
Okay.
Yeah, uncertain provenance on all of this.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Now.
So try not to learn anything from this quiz, okay, listeners? Don't.
This is a very fun quiz. I'm just trying to say, I'm not vouching for it.
Okay, here we go.
How many chocolate bunnies are manufactured?
Oh, jeez. 14 billion.
No. Do you really want to guess?
I don't really care. No, a billion.
90 million.
90 million. Okay, now we know.
All right, here's one. What color were the first Easter eggs dyed?
Oh, wow. That's a good one. Blue.
Red.
Oh, I thought of red at first. Weird, because I was like, that's an old-fashioned color. And then I thought, what does that mean? So I guessed blue. Why red?
For the blood of Christ.
Oh. Okay.
Let's don't comment on that. Let's just keep
moving.
That's
the idea. That's the reason for the season.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Okay, here. This was a hard one, I thought. But what are you supposed to buy at Easter to bring you good luck throughout the year? I've never heard this.
What are you supposed to buy?
Yeah.
A gift certificate to Walgreens. Walgreens, your friendly local drugstore.
No.
What are you supposed to buy? A bunny hutch.
Clothes. That's why everybody used to get a new Easter outfit.
What is this quiz?
Hey, I just ate lunch there. That's all.
What was that question? You're supposed to buy clothes?
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
That's all.
That's it? Thank God. Did you get this all off a diner placemat?
I got it off a diner whiteboard.
Okay. All right. Oh, if it were a placemat, I would be upset. But since it's a whiteboard, yeah, that's pretty official. Okay. Well, thank you to the Tilton Diner in Tilton, New Hampshire for that Easter quiz, I guess, huh?
Why not?
Yeah, okay.
It certainly disgusted you.
Yeah, in more ways than one, honestly. This whole toilet paper Easter setup. I can't wait for Easter to be over now. It's just all gross.
Oh, stop. Ugh. Just stop yourself. But jelly beans, who the hell likes jelly beans? I know millions of people do.
Next year, I'll make sure there's a roll of pastel pink toilet paper in your Easter basket.
You can't find it.
Now, speaking of appetizing topics, we have for a number of weeks been asking our listeners to email in and tell us just their favorite kind of cake. And nobody would do it. And it became a little bit of a running joke. And then all of a sudden, everybody wrote in to tell us about their favorite kind of cake. I don't know what it was about my call to action in the last podcast.
I think you were stern about it.
Was I? Well, I guess it worked. It got results. We have to tip a cap to Greg Ann, the loyal listener, Greg Ann, who was the first to write in with his favorite kind of cake. And what kind of cake was it? I have it here. A flourless chocolate cake.
Yeah.
My wife makes for me every birthday. She tops it with some loose blueberries and blackberries. Delicious.
It sounds delicious.
It does sound delicious. Maybe some powdered sugar on that too, I'm picturing. Maybe.
I would think so. And maybe even whipped cream on a little whipped cream on the side.
All right. Let's not get crazy here.
All right. But that sounds very tasty. I've never had flourless cake.
Never?
I don't think so.
Maybe you should make it. See what it tastes like. Yeah. I know one ingredient you won't need. So check that off the list right away.
Yeah, right.
Molly J also writes in. She says, I am often a week behind in the podcast because I never know what day it is. Well, you never know what day our podcast is coming out. I never know. So, yeah, I didn't think of that angle. We're not the most reliable in putting the podcasts out every week. So I keep assuming that I have missed the boat to tell you my favorite kind of cake. Right. Never. People think it's over. No. If you are listening to this 10 years from now, yeah, you can still write in and tell us your favorite kind of cake. In any case, Molly says that she's been craving a strawberry box cake for the last year. But if it were my favorite, like, I probably would have made one by now, she says. Honestly, I think my favorite might be carrot. And that largely has to do with the frosting. Well, that was quite a journey you took us on there, Molly.
Yes.
That strawberry box cake got my mouth watering. I like a carrot cake, too.
That's good. I like that.
Molly also says, although I agree we should be resisting the New York Times imposition that we should never stop reading the news, it's an old hobby horse of mine she's referencing, they do have a game called Connections that sounds like it's essentially only Connect. You play this game, right, Mom?
I used to, but then it went kablooey for 2 or 3 days in a row, and I gave up on it.
Oh, well, you play some bootleg version of it. You don't play it on the New York Times site, right?
That is not true.
It is true. Listeners, this is true, what I just said.
It is not true. It's a complete lie.
In any case, yeah, Connections is just the connecting wall from Only Connect. And the New York Times said, hey, you know, that would be a great game on our website that we could charge for. And so they did. But yeah, it's
Okay, then it isn't, because I don't pay for anything.
Yeah, no, I told you. I knew I was right. Yeah. Blaine P. writes in, Blaine's favorite cake is German chocolate.
German chocolate, yeah.
You approve of that?
I am always mystified by it because I never ever had it as a young adult, because it always looked nasty. I'll just say that.
Okay. Wow. Blaine is crying right now listening to this.
No,
I'm sure.
No, he's not. But I'm not sure what that means, really.
Okay. I don't know what that means either.
Because do you know what it looks like? It has coconut, but it's light brown frosting. And is it lesser chocolate, or it's a very confusing cake to me.
And is this the German thing? I mean, that's not actually German. It's named after a guy whose name was German.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's some weird origin story about German chocolate cake. I don't think it's actually from Germany.
Oh, that's interesting.
This is a wonderful email from Blaine. I will forward it to you, Mom, if I haven't already. I'm not sure if I caught all of them this week. But in any case, Blaine talks about, so happy you reviewed Dune, and then talked about getting passports.
Oh.
Blaine says, we just went through a similar ordeal. If you've been listening, you've heard my trouble getting a child's passport at the post office.
Blaine's, he sent a picture of his.
Oh, so you did get this email. Yeah.
I did.
Yeah, this little baby. Yeah.
Oh my God, how they messed that up. He's very cute.
Mostly they had a hell of a time getting an adequate photo because our child was so young. There was only one postal worker there. Oh, Lord. And by the time we were through, there were no fewer than 10 other people waiting in line. Yikes. And then he sends the photo that... Oh, that is one unhappy little baby. That baby is saying, just take the picture. What is the deal here?
All right.
Being held.
Yeah.
Oh, you can tell how tiny the infant is because I assume Blaine's hand is holding the baby's head steady. And it's quite a photo they ended up with, but it worked in the end.
But I hope he writes that story down so that he can tell his son that story.
So I need to follow up on the passport story.
Oh,
because people have only heard the post office horror story. And then I said I had an appointment at the library and I was hoping for good things there. Well, the day comes, I pick the kids up at school. Anna has decided to make an appointment downtown right before the passport appointment we have at the library. And I said,
and both parents have to be there.
Both parents have to be there. Yeah. So I said to her, okay, but you got to get in the car right away. Like, there is no time to spare. And there's no way I'm going to be late. Right after what we went through at the post office.
Right, yeah.
So I'm driving about halfway to the, I'm going to name them. It's the Niles Main Public Library. So we were about halfway to the Niles Main Public Library. Not actually in Maine, just...
yeah.
Oh, it's spelled that. Anyway, we're halfway to the Niles Main Public Library and my phone rings and it's my lovely wife. And she says that she can't find a car to get to the library and she's going to be quite late. And I just said, basically, what do you want me to do? You have to get there. We've been waiting weeks for this appointment and you know they're sticklers. So I show up with the two kids. It's about 10 minutes before our appointment. And I walk over and, oh, God, I am just hating that I have to do this. I walk over to the passport desk and there's a lady there. And I explain the situation and say, you know, we had to make separate appointments for the two kids. And I said, can we maybe get the later appointment if she gets here in time for that one that's a half hour from now? And like, you've never seen somebody shrug so many times in the course of 30 seconds because she's just like... Lord. I don't know. I can't make you any promises. We can't do anything without both parents here. She's going by the book. My wife ends up being about 40 minutes late to the appointment. And we walk over to the passport desk and there's just a cloud of doom around me at this point. And and believe me, Anna is well aware of it. I had spent the last 40 minutes just collecting myself and like, A, stealing myself up for the humiliation of going up to the passport desk hat in hand and saying like, gosh, we're 40 minutes late, but can you still help us? And also trying to tamp down my inferno of rage at my darling, lovely spouse.
Yes.
We walk up to the passport desk. There's no one there. A librarian sees us and scurries into the back room. And out comes this young man. His name was Elisha. I will forever remember Elisha because he walks over to the desk and says, who's getting a passport today? And I said, Leo and Eve, these two kids right here. We were done 20 minutes later. All we needed was one person to say, hey, let's just take care of this. My forms were in order. Everything was actually, he said, one of the photos maybe could be trouble. He said, but we'll just send it along. And if the State Department needs a new photo, they'll contact you and you can sort all that out. No problem. You know, at the post office, they would have said, this photo is no good. Get out.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to finish up that story because I do want to salute. And this is a friendly salute. Unlike last time, I want to salute the Niles Public Library, and in particular, Elisha at the passport desk for just treating us decent and treating us like human beings, which is all we were seeking in this process. So if you need a passport in the Chicago area, consider your local library instead of the post office. Wow. Happy ending.
That is a happy ending. And I do find that my library, these people really want to go out of your way to help you. If you have a question, if you're looking for something, if they can help you, they seem so happy to do so.
They love to help. It's true. I find that at the library. The library attracts people who want to help.
Yep.
Okay, this is from Jennifer T. She writes, as a little treat, I recently went back and listened to the first episode of Mom on Pop,
as this podcast
was originally called. Coming up on 10 years ago, she says. Good Lord, can that be?
Wow.
10 years. I never go back and listen to the old stuff. Hell no. As soon as a podcast goes out, I never listen to it again.
I didn't know we still had access to
that. Yeah, it's all there. I thought ahead as I was setting this stuff up, knowing that The Onion was a company in free fall. My most precious assets, I did not trust them with. So, yes, we have all the Mom on Pops still.
Okay. I didn't know that because I know they kept our name and...
That's right. That's right. But that's all they got.
Okay.
And I think Pot Mom's a better name anyway.
Yeah, I agree.
Jennifer writes, in that first episode, Bonnie mentioned that she'd never watched The West Wing. I wonder, A, if she has since watched any of it, and B, if you've thought of doing a review. Have you watched it?
Well, I never have watched it.
You never have watched it. All right. Well, that settles it. Should we review it? That might be fun. Watch an episode of The West Wing? That's not a bad idea. Okay, we'll think about that, Jennifer. We got another message from Jack Breakfast. I usually don't give out last names, but I just love to say Jack Breakfast. Oh,
wait, what would you name? Oh, it could be like Flapjack Breakfast.
Very good.
Wait. What would be another good name?
Oh, we're not going to top Flapjack Breakfast.
Well, nobody would name their kid Flapjack.
Oh, you mean if your last name were Breakfast, what could you name your...
Yeah.
I don't think you're going to do any better than Flapjack.
Okay. All right.
Susan Breakfast?
No.
Not as good. See?
No.
Doesn't work.
No.
Jack writes, whenever people ask me, what's your favorite cake, I need to know. Apparently, he gets this question a lot. I always answer, Black Forest. But I don't know why, because it isn't true. My most beloved cake is in actuality the Dobosh. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing that. A.K.A. Dobos Tort, a Hungarian classic lovingly prepared by my grandmother when I was a boy. Oh. Every few years, I'll find a local bakery that claims to specialize in this spongy layer cake. But the result for me is only ever wistful disappointment. Oh.
He's going to have to learn how to make one himself and then tweak it. Wow.
Yeah, maybe he can dig up the recipe. I'm sure he's tried.
Yeah, I wonder.
Jack also writes, John, I was delighted to hear your mention in the recent Simpsons episode that you were a Glenn Gould freak. I'm paraphrasing because I am too. Every few years, I'll visit his grave here in Toronto, and quite honestly, I'm overdue. Hey now, maybe I should combine these two activities. I can't imagine Glenn Gould's ghost would mind my chomping on a delicious Dobosh alongside his final resting place.
Oh my gosh, how fitting, how proper.
Glenn would totally be fine with that, because as Jack writes, he was a fun-loving and wacky fellow in his fashion. Yes, in his fashion.
It's hard to believe there's two of you, though.
Oh, there's dozens of us. There's dozens of us Glenn Gould freaks. Oh, Glenn Gould... is a really special human being, not just a great pianist, but also just an innovative thinker about media and about music's role in all our culture, and also just a weirdo on the spectrum. People consider him to be quote unquote on the spectrum, or whatever term we use for that now.
Yeah,
He was an eccentric, and unfortunately, took a great many drugs and like prescription drugs. And he would get prescribed something for one thing, and then he'd get something prescribed for the side effect of the other thing. And his health was not great toward the end. And also his playing technique. He played so low at the piano that he really had trouble with his wrists and forearms later in life. So it hurt to play later in life. So I don't know why I'm focusing on the sad parts of his story, but yeah, he's an interesting fellow. Thanks, Jack. Anna from Finland writes in.
Oh my gosh, are you kidding?
I'm not. Anna from Finland. Her favorite cake is the Britakaku. Again, I apologized if I'm messing this up, or Brita cake, which is a Finnish cake usually made during the summer, because to make a really good Brita, you need fresh berries. It has layers of cake, meringue, whipped cream, and berries, and it is delicious. My sister always makes one for midsummer. Wow, it sounds delicious.
It sounds yummy.
Now, when I read Brita cake, what a Philistine I am, I was like, oh, is this a cake that you somehow use a water filter to make? I'm sorry, Anna. That was my first thought.
It's not your, you know.
No, it's not. But Brita cake. Oh, I got to have that Brita cake. And I didn't know we had any listeners in Finland. So thanks for reaching out, Anna.
That's really exciting.
Yeah, isn't it?
It is.
Cody writes in and says, my favorite cake is tres leches if I'm feeling fancy, but I feel like I should eat more lemon cake. I like the way Cody puts that. I should be eating more lemon cake. I really got to incorporate.
It's healthier.
Yeah. Incorporate that into my diet.
Yeah.
Also,
yeah.
It makes me very happy whenever I remember that John will release breakdowns of the end of Better Call Saul in the future. I'm working on a breakdown this week. I know it's been a long time, and it always has been a long time. Thanks for reminding me, Cody. I have taped a breakdown, and I am working on editing it. Not as we speak, but right now or thereabouts. Wow. You guys really came through with the mail this week. And thank you so much for telling us your favorite kind of cake. And you can do that anytime. You ready to talk about our movie, Ma?
Oh, I really am.
This week, Mom and I are talking about The Holdovers. Paul Giamatti reunites with Sideways director Alexander Payne in The Holdovers, a movie that came out in 2023, but looks like it was made 50 years earlier. This early 70s period piece stars Giamatti as a prep school teacher who is forced to keep track of the students who didn't go home over Christmas break. Dominic Sessa plays Angus Tully, the kid most completely abandoned by his parents on this holiday. And Divine Joy Randolph plays the cafeteria manager who has to cook for them while she deals with her own grief. Here's a clip.
I heard you got stuck with babysitting duty this year. How'd you manage that?
Oh, I don't know. I suppose I failed someone who richly deserved it.
Oh, the Osgood kid? Yeah, he was a real asshole. Rich and dumb, popular combination around here.
It's a plague. And you? You'll be here too?
All by my lonesome. My little sister Peggy and her husband invited me to go visit them in Roxbury, but I feel like it's too soon. Like Curtis will think that I'm abandoning him, you know? This is the last place that my baby and I were together. Not including the bus station. Mm.
Well, I look forward to your fine cooking.
Oh, no, don't do that. All we've got is whatever's in that walk-in. No new deliveries till January.
The Holdovers is available on Prime Video. Mom, are you letting this movie stay for the holidays, or does it need to see you after class?
I loved this movie.
You loved it. Tell me why.
I loved it. You know, it made me feel nostalgic for something that I never experienced.
Yeah.
You know, the 70s, I graduated high school in the 70s, so they're familiar to me. I loved every part of this movie because I'm thinking, as it starts, my God, why does he have to have that eye thing? And then as it goes on, he has...
That's the least of it.
Giamatti's character has more and more
afflictions or oddities.
Afflictions.
Yeah.
And I missed the first time through. I watched it twice. But the first time through, I missed that after a certain amount of time during the day, he would start to smell like fish.
That's right. Yeah.
And so then it fell into place more for me the second time. I thought it was a fair depiction of prep school. You know, everybody's kind of a jerk and everybody's a little abandoned in some way, that they're here at a school with all boys, the shenanigans that go on, and that we have a little taste of that, but then most everybody goes home. I love the pomp and circumstance of the meeting in the, I don't know what they called it there, but I'll just say in the chapel room.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In the chapel.
And everybody is dressed nicely and everybody knows the rules. Here's the rules. When you come in, you say your name. I like that. I realize that's very old fashioned and not done anymore, but I liked seeing it. I liked seeing the orderly and the way things were more organized. I thought the characters were very real to life.
Yeah.
It gave you a little glimpse of the holdovers, the people that are left for Christmas that weren't able to go home. And I think somebody, either your class or Jenna's class, the parents were fighting, divorced parents were fighting, and somebody got left at school by accident.
Oh, Jeez. Really?
At your school. Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Mom thought dad was picking him up. And
oh, my God.
Yeah. So I think it's a situation that can.
Absolutely. I mean, I do remember when we'd go on holiday break. You know, I went to a prep school, New England prep school for high school. And yeah, there would always be. I remember Ayato, the Japanese student. Mm. He'd have to stay there for pretty much every. Oh, he only went home for the summer, I think. And there's one of those in the movie, right? There's a kid who's from like Korea or something. So this is definitely a thing. I loved the prep school environment. And of course, that made me nostalgic, not for the 70s, but for that prep school environment. Although my school was not so, like, there was no chapel or it wasn't so strict and it was co-ed and all that. But still, like, the setting felt very familiar to me. I love Paul Giamatti in anything. I just, I always enjoy him. I thought it was funny that they gave him this walleye, and I don't know how they did it. I guess with contacts or something, but wow.
They did it.
Oh, tell me.
That was a very, don't tell you?
Oh, do tell me. No, you know?
Oh, do tell you. I do know. They kept it secret, and people just kept at them. How was it done? How was it done? And it was actually some kind of prosthetic thing that they used.
Wow.
Very simple.
It's very convincing. And of course, they draw attention to it because the one student who gets held over like for the whole break, because what happens is there's a group of students and you think this movie is going to be like this group of boys getting to know each other and getting to like each other and forgiving their trespasses and all that. But then the one rich kid, his dad shows up in a helicopter and they all just fly away to go skiing for the break.
And he's only there because he won't cut his hair. His parents won't let him come home. His father wants him to cut his
hair. Oh, the ski kid? Yeah. So they're having some petty little argument that goes away. And then all the kids get to fly away. They all ride this one rich kid's coattails, except Angus. They can't get a hold of Angus's parents. So he has to stay behind. And what I appreciated about the movie is that it ends up being a movie about how people find, if they really need family, they're able to find it. Like all these three people find the family that they need to make it through this holiday, not to have the greatest Christmas of their lives, certainly, but the cafeteria worker, she warms to them a little bit and enough so that she'll reconnect with her sister and her actual family, right? She's lost her son in the Vietnam
War. She's lost her son in the war.
She doesn't really find a surrogate son. That would have been a very easy move for the script to make, but that's not what happens. But she does rediscover her family and reconnect. And of course, Paul Giamatti and the kid connect with each other in a sort of not father-son, but avuncular way. That said, I did find the script very flat. And I thought that the dialogue was rather witless. And I think the one moment that sums it up for me is, look, they've established relentlessly throughout this movie how much Paul Giamatti's character loves the classics and, you know, loves to read the great writings of Marcus Aurelius and what have you. And then there's this big moment where he's coming out of the headmaster's office and he says, I've known you for 30 years, and I can finally say with complete confidence that you, sir, are penis cancer in human form. And it was just such a thuddingly Hollywood screenwriter way to write the biggest insult you could ever give to someone, like penis cancer. Why
well,
is he
a
so?
Man that's, he's not familiar with that stuff. He's a gentleman. He's a scholar. That is very foreign to him. That was probably the crudest thing that ever came out of his mouth. And it's really not much of anything when all is said and done. But I think that shows that he doesn't have that in him. That's not at all who he is.
That's a fair interpretation of it, for sure. And I don't think that's how it's played by Giamatti. I don't think that's not how it's directed. But yes, in a character sense, that does make sense. Aside from this one moment, though, I just felt like there was not that extra layer of meaning in very much of the dialogue. It's, to me, superficial and straightforward and clumsy. Yeah.
I'm going to disagree with you. I'm going to say that I thought it was very subtle and very true to life in that there isn't always a funny one and a dumb one and a brilliant one. It isn't like buying penny candy, that life is really, I thought it was very true to life in that Paul Giamatti really steps out of his comfort zone and goes to Boston with Angus and they do things. And then Paul Giamatti really puts himself out there. Let's go visit your father, who he thinks is dead.
Well, Paul Giamatti's character thinks he's dead. Yeah. And that's,
he's dead.
It's funny
yes.
you mention that, because that was another clunker moment for me where Angus is sneaking away and Professor Hunnam catches up to him. And Angus says, "All right, I just wanted to see my dad while we were here." And Paul Giamatti says, "Why didn't you just say so? Of course we can go to a cemetery." I'm like, as soon as he says that, I'm like, oh, so we're not going to a cemetery. Like, why would he say, of course we can go to a cemetery, unless there's going to be some little twist coming up. I think the movie is clumsy in the way that it plots out these shifts. And I do feel like it often has this character speak in ways that human beings don't really talk. I don't mean to break your heart.
No, because I really came at this from a different angle.
Well, that's
good.
That's what the podcast is for.
And, you know, maybe I'm more familiar with the 70s and how people spoke and how they react.
Maybe so.
Maybe that's why I was so very comfortable and pleased with this enactment. I thought it didn't treat you like an idiot. It was very subtle.
Yeah, it's not dumb. You're right. It doesn't treat you like an idiot. It's not dumb and it's not condescending, certainly.
And it's very feeling oriented.
Mm.
At Christmas time, Paul Giamatti goes to a house party of another woman that works at the school, and Angus has an interaction with a girl there, and I just felt very familiar and comfortable with it. And maybe that's coming from a different generation and looking at it like it was filmed in that time.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing, is that, my understanding is that this movie was shot on digital, but it is maybe the best achievement of the film look I've ever seen. This is established up top. All the company logos that you see, the production company logos that you see at the beginning of the film, are all done in 70s style. And even when the date comes up, and, you know, it says MCM, XX, whatever, like that says 1971. So the movie itself even claims to have been made in 1971. Yeah. The aesthetic is spot on. Like, and it's a pleasurable movie to watch, to be sure.
To look at the clothes, to look at the cars, the prep school furnishings. I thought it made me feel very nostalgic.
Yeah.
I really loved everything about it. And I loved, I guess we won't say the ending, but what a gift to be given so late in life when you think it's over.
What a gift. Interesting interpretation of the ending.
Well, that is how I saw it, that all these dreams now the possibility was really there that why not?
Wow.
Why not? I think he was eventually going to get there to why not?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he's eventually going to get there is right. And that's the air of the ending of the movie, which I guess we can't.
Which I thought was very, I thought that really gave the viewer a lot of credit. Please get this. That's what I came away with. Please get this. We're not going to smash a pie in your face with pictures.
Because it's not a happy ending. Right. But it's not a, it's a cautiously optimistic, should we say that? And it's true. They have Hunnam and Angus have learned something about themselves and have gained strength from and this people. Experience and people. Yeah.
And people skills. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you're selling me on it more and more the more we talk about
it.
Okay. Although I didn't think it was bad. I just had a problem with the script.
No, but I think more important is that Angus could be a person that becomes very lost in life. And I think he really understood this experience for what it was. Somebody that sacrificed for him. Somebody that cared enough to sacrifice their job for him. I think that could change his whole life. His father is obviously not going to be in his life. His mother's I don't know. Broken. Is she interested? I don't. Yeah. Certainly misguided. And he is going to have to make his way. But he knows that there's people that will care. That's the hope he came away with. The knowledge that he came away with. That it may not be your mom. It won't be your dad. But there are people. There are good people out there.
Wow. Well, I hope our conversation has made you interested in seeing the movie, because, Mom, you certainly have added dimension to it for me. What is your grade for The Holdovers?
I gave it an A.
That's an
A. And I also want to say that the outside shots of the school, which I think is several different schools.
Oh, really?
But I'm not sure. But they were so New England-y. I just loved them. I loved it.
To create the fictional Barton Academy, the film crew shot on location at 5 real-life Massachusetts schools. Mm. Groton School, Northfield Mount Hermon School. Yep. NMH. I remember those guys. Deerfield Academy, of course.
Yeah.
St. Mark's School and Fairhaven High School. I don't know Fairhaven, but those other ones are all familiar to me. Okay, that's an A for The Holdovers. Mom, do you have a recommendation this week?
I do. This book wasn't really what I expected, but I really enjoyed it. It's called All Over But the Shelton by Rick Bragg, who is a Pulitzer Prize winning author. He writes about the South. Apparently he worked for the New York Times. He got in a little trouble. He sent are they called stringers? Anyway, somebody that went and did some research, and I guess he wrote about it as if he had gone, so he was dismissed.
Oh, I see.
From the New York Times. Yeah. So I didn't use the right words in there. But anyway, this is a book about his upbringing, his father, very abusive to his mother, an alcoholic, sort of comes back into his life at the end of the father's life and wants to rewrite history. He's not having it, and tells about his travels and his writing, writes a lot about Haiti and the unrest there, the danger, and really an excellent, excellent writer. And he has quite a few books out, but this is the first one I picked up, and it was very enjoyable.
That's All Over But the Shoutin' by Rick Bragg. Find it at your local library. That'll do it for this edition of Pop Mom. This episode of the podcast was edited, as always, by Scott Jones. Thank you, Scott. Mom and I will be back soon to talk about more pop culture. What should we talk about, Mom? What do you think?
Well, let's talk about something interesting.
Something interesting. Let me just write that down real quick. Interesting. Okay, got it. Hey, thanks for listening, everyone. If you enjoy the show, don't forget to tell your friends, especially if they live in Finland. We need more Finnish listeners,
yes,
please.
Yes, how exciting.
And we love to get email, as you can tell by this episode. It's popmom@ological.net. Tell us your favorite kind of cake. Talk to us about anything you want. We love you. Mom and I will talk to you again next week. Bye for now, Mom.
Bye, Johnny. I love you.
Love you, too.